No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. This is episode 182, and it is the beginning of the Steve Wilks era, and that's what this show is about. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today Sports Media Group's NFL Wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast is brought to you by Harry's.com, where you get a great shave at a great price. And also by Wink.com, where you can discover great wine today. And we're going to have some great deals. If you listen a little later on the show, we'll have some mess of great deals for you on those two sponsors of the show. Seth, it's finally here. 3 weeks later, we've finally got a head coach, Steve Wilks, formerly defensive coordinator of Carolina Panthers. And wow, I mean, this is the name that you were given. It seemed like it was the guy they wanted the most from the beginning, maybe. But what do you think of having Steve Wilks as the new head coach?
I'm excited. And yeah, it was the name that we talked about on the show right after the Bruce Arians retirement. This was literally the first name I was given by one of my contacts. And he said, this is the guy. And it was. And you know, you and I have talked about it. You know, I think both you and I were always good with Wilks, but we always kind of had an eye towards like a Brian Flores or a John DeFilippo, just because I don't know, maybe the intrigue and the unknown was a little different. But when you look at Wilks, when you look at his body of work, and I think and, you know, we'll get into all of it, but I think the biggest thing that came out of all of this, all the research you and I have done and looked at, the biggest thing was an article I read of a couple years ago, where Ron Rivera had to leave Carolina Panthers training camp. And he had Mike Shula there, and he had future head coach Sean McDermott there, his offensive and defensive coordinators, veteran guys in the league. And he tapped head coach while he was gone. He said, you're in charge. And that's just, I mean, we'll get to all the hyperbole and all the, you know, kind of stories that are coming out, but I don't think there's a better indication of that. This is a guy that so many people believe in and are rooting for to succeed. And it helps that he looks like Denzel Washington. So it's going to be fun to cover him as well.
It's really, I personally was sort of, I was leaning towards wanting Pat Shurmur simply because I thought he was the best fit, but there's no denying that Steve Wilks' background is one that you aren't impressed by, because he's, you know, kind of those things that Michael Bidwill talked about from in their coaching search of, they wanted a leader of men. They wanted someone who would continue their culture of accountability and has a track record of success, different people, different teams, different personnel. And, you know, Pat Shurmur fit that bill, but quietly, that was actually more Steve Wilks, because the turnaround that his defensive backs or the performance of the defense he coordinated were in, when the Cardinals sent out their press release, and you look at the turnarounds that they've had and you say, wow, he's impressive. He has the right. I mean, if he didn't say anything much different than what you might see or hear any other coach talk about in the introductory press conference, but you can't help but notice the way everyone gushed about him. You know, the character seems to be just impeccable. Players were very quick to compliment him. They said the Cardinals said that they received phone calls from unsolicited phone calls, talking about how great Wilkes is. And I haven't found this. I saw it somewhere on social media, so I don't know if this is certain, but it's a podcast. So we can throw this stuff out there if anyone's listening. There was this thing I ran across briefly in social media, but never actually found, that even Mike Tomlin, the Pittsburgh Steelers coach, supposedly called up the Giants to kind of stump for Wilkes. And I told him that they'd regret not hiring him. They still went with Shurmur. And so Wilkes is a guy, and really, on one side, this is the first defensive coach, like defensive leaning head coach, comes from a defensive background, that the Cardinals have hired since Dave McGinnis. And Dave McGinnis was a promotion, essentially. So you had Vince Tobin, Dave McGinnis. After that, you had Denny Green. He was an offensive guy. You go from Denny Green to Ken Whisenhunt and to Bruce Arians. And so we've gone almost this entire century with offensive-minded guys. And you guys remember, you all listen to me last time. I don't care which side of the ball on it. It depends on their staff, unless you're called, of course, the play caller. But it should be fun to see how the defense changes, if at all. Maybe reactions by fans haven't been real. Like Facebook fans, they wanted James Betcher. Well, half of them wanted James Betcher, and half of them want James Betcher fired. So I don't know how to think about those guys. The readers on our sites are sort of all over the place. I think the guy that everyone of the fan base would have liked the most was John DeFilippo. The problem is he is so much of an unknown.
Well, he's an unknown, and it's one of those things where this isn't a safe hire, but it's of the guys that are left, it's probably the safest hire. And I don't mean that in a negative way by any means. I think he's going to be an outstanding head coach from everything we've seen. But when you look at everything, when you look at the whole landscape of this, I think, again, who was left, he was the guy that made the most sense, and that's kind of where they ended up, that's where they went, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it is okay to do something safe, and that's what they did. And they brought in a guy that is, like you said, it's the respect level that he gets from around the NFL is really, really unmatched. And so when you look at this overall, it was a hire that makes sense because it fit all the criteria. But most importantly, it allows the Cardinals to move away from Bruce Arians without doing it in a tarnishing way. Like it's not a vindictive or anything type of way. It's to a very successful and well-respected coach. It's to a guy that is going to end up putting his own stamp on things, but he's going to be a guy that respects what Arians has built and kind of try. And obviously the goal is to build on to it and kind of grow the prospects of the Arizona Cardinals even further than what Arians had began to do.
And if you look at it, for me, why hire him over the others? If you look at the other candidates, obviously Pat Shurmur we're going to take out of the question because he chose the Giants allegedly over the Cardinals. Although whether he was at the top of their list or Wilkes was originally, we don't know. Cardinals obviously said that they got the guy that they wanted all along. They knew the first time they met him, and it was confirmed again. After they had dinner with him on Friday night, Saturday they knew. Saturday they had their decision. But over the other guys, so you've got of the other other guys that were sort of believed to be involved. So you had Mike Munchak. He turned it down. You had John DeFilippo and Brian Flores, who were going to be interviewed. You had Keith Armstrong and James Betcher. So what made him better than those other guys? Well, the one thing about Munchak that he had for him was, you know, he kind of was in the same thing. He'd been a head coach before, highly respected Hall of Fame player, one of the most well-regarded coaches in the NFL. He didn't want to continue on for whatever reason. Then you turn to the other guys. You've got Keith Armstrong, longtime coach. So he's got experience, he's got respect, but he's never been more. I mean, he's been a coordinator, so that's important. It's not an offense or defense coordinator, but he's done basically one thing for the last 20 years. You look at DeFilippo, he was an offensive coordinator for 1 year, been quarterback's coach. So there's some plus there, but no real experience leading an entire team. And so you got the plus or minus there. You go with Brian Flores, who's even more of a known. He comes from the Bill Belichick, you know, tree there, but he has even less experience. He's more varied or more, he's had more experience around doing lots of different things, versatility, but he didn't have any experience, as opposed to Wilkes, who has coached, he was a head coach at college. He's coached position players. He's coached entire defenses in the NFL. He was a position coach for a long time. He was an assistant coach, an assistant head coach for 3 seasons, and then he was a defensive coordinator. So he's done a little bit of everything. And when you look at the candidates, he does check off the most boxes, in my opinion. And add to that the demeanor and the reputation he has, all the anecdotes out there, it tells you he makes for a really great leader of the team.
He does. And you know, I think the biggest thing that you brought up is that he's a guy that he checked all those boxes, but it wasn't like that's the reason you hired him. I mean, obviously it was important, but he was a guy that has been around, that's respected, you know. But you read the stories about Eric Weddle saying that, you know, somebody, one of the players challenged him, and he thought there was going to be a fight, and Wilkes like didn't back down. And that's the thing, is he's a guy that he's passionate, and he believes in what he's doing and what he believes in, and he's a guy that's going to, you know, challenge players and hold them accountable. And that's something that we heard a lot about this offseason. I kind of made fun of it on Twitter the other day, but it's kind of the buzzword in hiring at this point is leader of men. And that's an odd statement to me. It's, you know, I don't know if I necessarily understand what they're going for there, but what I do understand is that Wilkes is a guy that demands respect and is respected. And that's something that's important when you're talking about a head coach. It's something that Arians had. He was respected by his players. It was a different kind of respect, in the way it was, you know, hey, this is fun guy. He's a guy to hang on, blah, 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 like stuff with Arians, and to play really hard for him because he treats us like equals. Now will a guy that demands respect and expects you to, you know, play your hardest, or he's not going to tolerate it. And so it's a different approach to getting similar results.
And you know, here, the best way I can describe it, Ron Wolfley on his radio show this morning talked about how, or Tuesday morning, I suppose, what it would be when you guys are listening to it, but said that the alpha in that organization in the locker room was B.A. He was the alpha, which makes things, you know, he was the leader. He said, you know, he kind of gave an anecdote of on the field, he would verbally undress players. But afterwards, he's cool. But he also would get in their face off the field for things like being too fat. You know, you saw really quickly how some players, like defensive linemen, sort of fell out of grace really quickly. Alameda Te'amu, Dan Williams early on, who actually kind of came into his own in Arian's first year. Maybe that's what happened this year with Rodney Gunter. You know, they just got too fat and he would just rip into them, and they knew. And the time that they had him run wind sprints, it was silent. All you heard was whistle, which tells you something, because, you know, these pro players, when something happens like this, will sometimes make it known that they are unhappy and they don't like what's going on. And Wolfley said at the time that they've been disciplined as a team when they were doing sprints, there wasn't a sound. All you heard was whistle. Which tells you the type of respect that he had. And Wilkes appears to command that same sort of respect. Attention to detail, accountability, expecting excellence. But at the same time, as we're going to talk about in a little bit, the notion that you have to teach and help players grow.
You do. And it's one of the things that when you look at Wilkes' background, you see a guy that's spent his career teaching and making players better. You go back to that, you know, those Bears teams, and you look at how well they played in the defensive backfield. Guys like Peanut Tillman, you know, leading the league at interception or strips or things of that nature. And that's the attention to details and coaching that he talks about. You look at what he did for him. You look at a guy like James Bradberry of the Carolina Panthers, a young player that came from a small school that is turning into a superstar in this league. And that's what he does, is develop guys. But, and I know we're going to get to his assistants in a second, but the other thing is he's brought along two guys from Carolina that have done similar at their positions. And now, you know, one's going to be his defensive coordinator, but he's been the linebacker coach in Carolina. And what is the thing that you and I talked about from day one with Wilkes on this show? Think about what he can do for Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick. And now he's bringing the guy that got the most out of Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis and helped develop Shaq Thompson. They're bringing that guy here too. Like, oh, that's a huge deal. And that's, you can see that kind of changeover in philosophy. You know, you had all these guys with experience on the Arians staff. You had guys like Tom Moore and Tom Pratt and all these different guys that have been around and done things, and they use their experience to coach. Now you're bringing in guys that are more teachers, that are guys that are going to, you know, buckle down and work with intricacies of the position and teach them how to win at the position. And that's the thing. I'm posting this on Wednesday, so, you know, when you read or when you listen to this, it'll be posted on Revenge of the Birds, but the one concern I have, and it's not really a concern, but the one thing that when you look at Steve Wilkes' defense that you look at and you pause, is how complex it is. Because they run a lot of zone coverage, but they do what they call pattern matching zone coverage. Instead of just dropping to a zone, they match whatever the pattern the wide receivers are running to try to, you know, negate the holes in zone defenses. So it asks a lot out of sight adjustments and guys using their instincts. And when you look at that, be really good for guys like Buda Baker and Tyrann Mathieu, who are highly instinctual football players. I don't think anybody's really going to be super concerned about Patrick Peterson, but you look at, what did Carolina have above literally everybody else in the NFL? They had two linebackers that can cover probably anybody on the field at any time. And so now you're going to ask Hassan Reddick, who's really never done it, and Deion Buchanan, who's, you know, if there's been a weak part to his game, his first, you know, 5 years in the league, it's been his, or his first 4 years in the league, it's been dropping into coverage. Now you're going to ask those guys to kind of mimic what Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly were doing. And so it's going to be interesting to watch, but if there's people that can get in there, it's Steve Wilkes and the staff he's putting together.
Next up on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, next coming up after the break, we're going to talk about his introductory press conference and what Wilkes had to say and our reactions to that. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red.
If you're like me, you know more about the Arizona Cardinals' second half defense than you do about wine varieties. However, that can change for you like it has for me. Wink, that's W-I-N-C, is the wine club for you. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. How? Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, then shipped right to your door. And that's all starting at just $13 a bottle. Even if you don't know a thing about wine, just that you like to drink it, Wink makes it easy because they do all the work for you, matching wines to you based on your taste. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask, or translate into a recommendation. The questions are simple, like, how do you take your coffee? And how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections will be. New delicious wines available to be sent to you. And the best part is there are no membership fees, and you can skip any month or cancel at any time. Shipping is covered, and best of all, if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/cred. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/cred for $20 off. trywink.com/SEERED.
We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, talking now about the press conference. The Cardinals introduced Wilkes to the media. Nice nearly half hour press conference introducing Wilkes. President Michael Bidwill spoke. Wilkes had a lot to say. Steve Keim said a few things. What were your biggest takeaways from what was said at the presser on Tuesday?
I think the first thing that you take away is that Wilkes, in a good way, and I think all head coaches kind of need this, he's got a lot of bravado and he believes in himself and he believes that he's earned this opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL. And that was the first thing I took, is this is a guy that didn't look overwhelmed by the situation. So when you look at that, the first thing you see is a guy that it feels like he's in the position he deserves to be in, and he's going to, you know, succeed. And you want that. You want a guy that it doesn't seem like the lights are too bright for him.
And that, I got that same sort of thing. In fact, there was, you know, some of our local reporters here kind of joked at some of the introductory press conference comments that have happened. You know, Buddy Ryan back in the 90s, you've got a winner in town. You had Denny Greed come in who brought a chart showing his winning percentage. And so extreme cases of bravado telling him, hey, I'm good. And I didn't expect that from Wilkes, but then towards the end, you got it. It was a little more subtle, but he says, I come from a pedigree of winning. And he points to the two Super Bowls he's been a part of, the NFC Championships, the 8 playoff games. You know, he points to the player development that he's done, guys like Josh Norman, you know, who turn into all pros. He makes the case. He has the comment where he says, you know, I know you made, you know, you tell him the guys who hired him, you made the right decision. He is very convicted. Now we'll see how that plays out. It wasn't the same sort of bravado that you got from Bruce Arians, no risk, no biscuit. It wasn't Ken Whisenhunt talking about, we know this works. We've seen it before, and it wasn't even Denny Green or Buddy Ryan, but it certainly was, and it wasn't Rex Ryan either promising the Super Bowl, but he made very clear what the team's expectations are, what the goal is, and that's to bring a world championship or bring world championships. And so it was just enough bravado, just enough confidence. But you came away, it didn't come away as comical like in other cases. You're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he said that. You said it, and you're like, yeah, all right, that's the guy.
And not only is he the guy, but he's the guy that he wants the challenge. He wants to prove people wrong. You know, I've watched some other head coaches conferences that were hired, and it seemed too big for them or anything like that. It just, there's a lot of coach speak and a lot of, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity, and that's a good thing. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but when you watched Wilkes, he said things like, I've earned this. He said things like, you've being the Cardinals made the right decision in giving me this opportunity. Like he's telling you that I'm going to go out there and coach my butt off. So, you know, just be ready to enjoy the ride, because it success is coming, because it's followed me everywhere I went in the NFL. And like you said, he's got that kind of attitude, and he's got the hardware to back it up so far.
And you've seen it as a position coach, as a coordinator, he's done it. The next takeaway for me was, and in fairness, he did spend the very first part of his message to his statement to the media thanking people for who got him there, you know, thanking Ron Rivera for giving him the opportunity to stand in front of the Panthers as assistant head coach, to be able to dress the whole team so that it became a natural thing, and almost to the point like Bruce Arians had that interim head coaching experience when Chuck Pagano got sick. And he had a taste, and he knew, I can do this. I think that's where Wilkes is at. Now, he said, and I actually posted something on this on Tuesday afternoon, Monday afternoon, which is after the news was made official, but he had not been introduced to the press yet. And it was a little blurb about what apparently he had told the team for the team website. And it was very interesting. It's a lot of the same things you kind of hear, but almost echoed exactly what was 5 years ago. He said this is a retooling, not a rebuild, which is exactly what Steve Keim said 5 years ago when the same sort of situation. And two, you go with from trust, loyalty, respect, which were the three pillars for Bruce Arians, to trust, commitment, and accountability for Steve Wilkes, which is very, very similar. And so you get almost the Bruce, you get a, it seems like a more, I don't know if it's more intense, but it might be a little more intense version of Bruce Arians. And in fact, if I were to imagine Ray Horton getting the head coaching job after Ken Wisenhunt, I would bet that Ray Horton would have sounded a lot like how Wilkes sounded on Tuesday afternoon.
And I think a lot of that is time spent kind of growing through the ranks. You know, he is 48 as opposed to 60 like Arians, but he's a guy that back when you look at Arians, he had immediate success and immediate kind of stardom, become a college head coach. And Wilkes had the same thing at, I believe it was Savannah State, was it not? Something like that. You know, Wilkes had the same thing, you know, a short college head coaching experience. And then they've kind of trudged back through years of coaching for Wilkes. And so they've developed, you know, kind of a keen sense of what needs to be done and what is expected. And when you look at it, I think for Wilkes, you know, he's developed that kind of, similar to Ron Rivera, kind of, you don't want to say a general, but kind of that general style of, you know, command and what he expects from his players, and that's how he's going to continue to coach.
And it doesn't sound like he's going to be tailgating with his players after games, wins or losses. I get that impression out of Wilkes early on. He's not the drinking buddy coach. But aside that, some of the things that they touched on, defensive scheme. Is he going to be? The reporters there with the questions tried to get a little out of what it's going to say. Wilkes says he's flexible. He's coached in 4-3. He's coached in 3-4. if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They're going to see what it is. I sort of remember Bruce Arians saying the same type of thing. We're going to be multiple. You're not going to be able to label us, but we're going to be physical and we're going to be fast. Wilkes said a lot of the same. We're going to be physical. We're going to be disciplined. Ultimately, 3-4-4-3, when you get in the specialized packages, it doesn't really matter because almost every team goes with a four-man front, whether that's two down linemen, two outside linebackers, they end up being lined up four on the line. It's going to come down to that base package, and based on who the defense he coordinated was a 4-3, the linebackers coach, who's going to be his defensive coordinator, is coached as a 4-3 guy. You have to think that base package is probably going to be a 4-3. Not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that. It just will raise a little bit of questions as we approach the season about personnel and how they're used. Like, how will Marcus Golden be used? What will they do with Chandler Jones? They put him back on the line, ask him to beef up a little bit. They're going to let him do the same. Can Hassan Reddick actually be better than what the role was going to be for him? Because they compared him in many ways to Von Miller. Will he play that? He'll be kind of be able to play that same sort of position where you can play in space and you can still rush the quarterback too.
And is you have a guy that's coached a lot of successful high-end talent, and you've got a guy that's, developed talent and a guy that's created success for players that – quite frankly, weren't necessarily very successful or good. And he's had superstars at linebacker in Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis. But when you look at the rest of the roster, it's not as though, they're the Vikings with a number of first and second round picks laden across everywhere. This year they had some struggles with Star Lotulelei, pick Mario Addison has developed into a player, but he's older. He wasn't drafted by the Panthers in any means, and he had last year he had 9.5 sacks, this year he had 11 sacks. I mean, this is that's kind of what he does. Charles Johnson, pick, but he is, or sorry, a third round pick, but he's 31 years old, and he was putting up still putting up nice numbers for them. It's just he's a guy that is able to adjust to what his team has at this time. And I think the biggest thing is what he's done in the back end. Obviously that's where his bread and butter is, but you look at it, James Bradbury is a second round pick. Daryl Worley is a third round pick, both from the 2016 draft. This is a 24 and 22 year old. And they have a pretty defense when it's all said and done. He had a guy in Mike Adams who's 36 years old playing starting for him. And then Kurt Coleman's a former seventh round pick of the Eagles. It's not like they have guys that they've invested in heavily, like Buda Baker, like Tyrann Mathieu, even like a Tyvon Branch, who they brought in on kind of a pretty good deal. Like I said, their first round picks all sit at the linebacker position. Kuechly, Davis, and Shaq Thompson. Star was a first-round pick, but from there, you're talking about a lot of guys that are developed, are older, are cast off, and they still do a really, really nice job every year for the Panthers. And that's kind of his MO, right? It's finding guys, developing guys, creating strong units, despite maybe not having the world. And so when you look at it, when you look at it at the end, that's kind of how they've done things and how they've built things. And he's done a really, really nice job of putting guys in a position to be successful. And when you look at the Cardinals defensively, you have to kind of be excited. Like, there is the unknown, right? Like, okay, really kind of sucked this year when Betcher tried to go into zone. But it's a different type of defense. It's a different type of zone. And as you said, Wilkes is adept at putting guys in a position to succeed more than he is saying, like, oh, this is the defense we run. Like, I was reading Cat Scratch Reader, the SB Nation blog, and they're talking about it. Like, the first game 2016, Sean McDermott as the defensive coordinator, literally 80% zone coverages. In the first game, he had already brought that down to 70%, and it fluctuated and dropped more and more as the season went along, because he's doing different things. He's putting players in a position to be successful and to win in different ways. And so to see him, come to Arizona now, he's going to have to, you know what you have in a guy like Patrick Peterson. You can kind of put him anywhere and be successful, but he's going to tailor the defense to Deion Buchanan or Hassan Reddick. He's going to make sure Chandler Jones is still a guy that leads the NFL in sacks. But the questions are, what do you do with a guy like Marcus Golden? Where do you play him? Is he a guy that can play off the ball, or is he a guy that needs to put his hand in the dirt, kind of play that five technique defensive end, and then rush the passer, in passing situations? Like, what are the situations that you're going to get with these guys? And so that, all becomes the question. And I think Wilkes is, he's comfortable in using guys in different ways.
The next thing that probably is the biggest question is what they're going to do on offense and what they're going to do at quarterback. Let's address the quarterback thing. I didn't listen to it live. But I listened to it about an hour later, I do my day job stuff. But as I listened to that, when they talked about the quarterback, it almost seemed like that Wilkes kind of let the plans out of the bag a little bit, because they said they were going to have a plan in free agency and be aggressive, like almost. And Steve Kind made sure, like he said the message that he always does, whether it's in the draft, whether it's in free agency, or whether it's a trade. And then later on, Wilkes also echoed that however they acquire a quarterback, they're going to find the best one for the team. But it sounded like, at least initially, that option number one will probably be in free agency. I don't know if you caught that, but that's how I felt when I heard that, which leads you to believe, ooh, if they're going to go aggressive in free agency, who are the guys that you could go aggressively at? Kirk Cousins would probably be number one. Maybe Sam Bradford. Drew Brees, he's never going to hit the market, but that's absurd. See, if you can't steal Jimmy Garoppolo away from San Francisco, no, that's not going to happen either. But then you start looking at the names in free agency as to, okay, who are they going to go after? Because it seemed like they were going to – Wilkes made it sound like that was going to be option A.
Yeah, and, you look at the entirety of the quarterback position, and, I know Steve Keim tried to sell it today as like, oh, it's a blank slate, but that blank slate's hard to fill, right? Like, that's the whole thing. And so we've talked about this in a number of ways. One, we don't know who the offensive coordinator is going to be. The reports coming out are that it might be Mike McCoy, and I said on this show, a month ago almost, or 3 weeks ago, that allegedly, if it was Mike McCoy, his guy, his bridge, his free agent was going to be Brock Osweiler. And so when you look at that, I think that's part of the whole interviewing the OC discussion, is like, who's your quarterback? Who's your target? Because as much as Steve Wilkes stamp on this team, the stamp's not going to be him picking a quarterback, right? The stamp's going to be a physical defense that kind of sets the tone. And when you look at the quarterback position, he wants a guy that's proven. So he's probably saying, like, go get me Kirk Cousins, a 29-year-old that I can have for 6 or 7 years in the system, and I don't have to worry about, like, a guy I can, strap myself to. He's probably not thinking, like, hey, get me a through Stanton for a year or two while we develop
Derek Anderson
Jackson. You know, a Derek Anderson, yeah, type thing. So, you know, I think as a head coach, that's his thing, is like, hey, don't put me in a position where I'm losing a bunch of games 14 to, you know, 7 or 14 to 9 because we kicked a bunch of field goals. Like, put me in a position where my team's going to score points and my defense is going to be able to do their thing. And so I think that was, you know, his probably hit and kind of like, hey, let's not let the cat out of the bag about what our plans are.
And the other thing is, what is he going to be talking? What is his thing philosophically on offense? And if there was one thing, and we probably felt that was going to be the case going on, just a type of, but he said, it's critical to be able to run the football. Now that's sort of an easy thing to kind of go for when you've got David Johnson on your team. But if that is sort of the basis for what you want to do offensively, because as a defensive guy, he says he knows there's one thing that is more demoralizing to a defense than anything else. It is the ability to run the football and move the change, that move the chains. Now that doesn't mean that they're not going to have a complex passing game or that they're not going to take chunks down the field, which in today's NFL, you do need some of that. But it appears that, number one, that their focus is on to build a running game, which should be a little bit exciting because he doesn't come in like Bruce Arians did with the reputation of hating the run. I mean, Bruce Arians talks about wanting to run the ball, and his offense is built on running the ball and play action, but he has always been one to quick to get away from it. We'll see if it becomes more of a, what Harold Goodwin always wanted, you know, got to run the ball.
And, you know, when you look at the roster as is, I think that's the way they have to build. Don't you? I mean, that's kind of what they have to do.
Well,
because it's not
the only talent on offense. They've got a really good run blocking left tackle. They've got David Johnson. They got Adrian Peterson on the roster. You have no certainty at any other position.
Right. And so you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do kind of offensively. And yeah, you have talent at that position. So don't screw it up, right? Like just allow your team to do what they have. And that's why, you know, if we talk about it a little bit, that's why I'm kind of a fan of Bevel, because I've seen him with bad quarterbacks. You know, we've seen him with Gus Frerotte. We've seen him with Tavarius Jackson. We've seen him with a number of quarterbacks that I wouldn't say are all pros, and there's still been an average team. You might say, well, who wants average? But sometimes you have to be average before you can be good.
Right. And that's where you want your bottom. That's where you want your floor. The floor of what we had for the last couple of years, that's a good floor, because we saw a much, much lower floor with Ken Wisenhunt the last three seasons, where they went 5-11, 8-8, 5-11. But in each of those three seasons, they had losing streaks of at least 6 games for 3 straight years. 8-8.
And if you think
8-8 is bad, that's good.
And like you said, if that's your floor, if that's what you're building up from, then that's how you want to be. And the thing is, that David Johnson is going to be, you know, rookie or second year Adrian Peterson type effective. That's unfair, unrealistic expectations to put on David Johnson, coming off an injury, a lost season type of thing. But with a guy like Darrell Bevel, you know he's going to get the opportunity to put up those type of numbers. When you look at Mike McCoy and McCoy's offenses, this off the air, it really reminds me of like Ken Wisenhunt or Bruce Arians offenses, in the sense that if you don't have a good quarterback, you're not going to be very good. And you might say, well, duh, that's how it always works. And kind of, but guys like Pat Shurmur and guys like Doug Peterson in Philly, they've really done a nice job of masking the position. which is why they're going to end up losing to, you know, to the Patriots. But when you're able to kind of mask your deficiencies, and if you're quarterback deficient, that's really hard to do. But if you're able to focus on the run game, have a great defense, and take shots at the right time down the field, you put yourself in a position. And McCoy's been a guy that has always kind of needed that quarterback to lead his offense. He's a guy that, you know what, you give him a Peyton Manning, you give him a Phillip Rivers, and there's a good chance that that offense is going to be really effective. But you give him, you know, rookie Paxton Lynch, or you give him, you know, Trevor Siemian, or any of these guys, and you're going, yeah, this is not what I signed up for. And so when you look at all of that, the question becomes, how do these guys fit in with what Wilkes wants to do? You look at Wilkes, he's saying, I want to be a run the ball, play defense, grind out the clock, and yes, we will take shots still, but I want to be a guy that takes shots conservatively, not a guy that it's third and one, let's throw the nine route, right? Like that famous Bruce Arians maneuver, like third and one, let's go empty and go deep, right? Type stuff. Yeah. And so look at that. It makes sense from Wilkes' philosophy. It's because he's a defensive guy, and he's saying offense is stupid. I just need you not to screw it up, and I'm going to get us a win. And again, I embrace that because it's like Arians kind of was, where like, look, my offense is so good, I'm going to score points on you. So just don't let the defense screw it up. And maybe that didn't work out all the time, but when it did work out, it was really fun. So Wilkes is obviously the opposite of that, in that, like, look, my defense is really good, so just make sure your offense doesn't screw this up.
Coming up next on the last segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, coming up after the break, we're going to talk some more about the possible coordinators, more about who could be in the play, who can be in play on his staff, who's coming and who's going. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Before we go back to the show, we've got to definitely have to mention our friends over at Harrys.com. The shave club, well, not necessarily shave club, but it's a great way to get a great shave at a great price. So much cheaper than the traditional brands that you're going to pay out the nose for. It's such a much better shave than using the cheap disposable blades, or heaven forbid, like I did for years, the electric razors. Make the switch like I did. 3 million guys have done it. We're all about a great shave at a fair price. And we have a special deal for you listeners, as we have for weeks. Harry's is so confident you're going to love the blades, so they're going to give you the trial shave set for free. So you get the five blade, you get the five razor blade, engineered grades, really super close shave. You get the foaming shave gel, feels wonderful, smells great too. And then your significant other will love that. And you get the ergonomic razor handle, and you get a travel blade cover. All that, you get it. All you got to pay for is $3 for shipping. You get a $13 value for free, just for paying the cover shipping for $3. And it's a perfect deal. You get that. You go to harrys.com/cred for a free trial. Again, that's harrys.com/cred. We're back for the last segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, and coordinators, coaching staff, that's what's on tap now. There was the hope that James Betcher would stick around. That was really never in the cards, was it? I never believed that was in the cards. I think the only way James Betcher stayed was, one, his head coach, or two, maybe Keith Armstrong, maybe, because he's an Arians guy who probably could have convinced him otherwise. I don't think that there was probably any scenario otherwise where James Betcher stayed on staff, and he's not. He's now, as it has happened during the recording of this show, the report came out, he will be the next defensive coordinator for the New York Giants. So Pat Shurmur's date James Betcher, which was, well, I guess that probably had Shurmur come here, I guess Betcher would have been in the cards as well. They're both on the Giants now.
Yeah, and so when you look at what the Cardinals did, and they went with a guy he's comfortable with, and obviously you're going to get a guy in terms of Wilkes who the defense. I mean, I'm assuming that he's going to call the defense overall, but they brought in a guy in Al Holcomb to be the defensive coordinator, a la, you know, Harold Goodwin being the offense coordinator for the Cardinals. And when you look at Al Holcomb and you look at his background, he's the guy I was talking about earlier. He's the linebackers coach for the Carolina Panthers.
You're talking about a guy really that has, good linebackers.
Right. I mean, you're talking about a guy that helped develop three of the better linebackers in the NFL.
And then you add, I mean, and they've got talent at line. That's the great thing. So you've got talented linebacker too. Well, one, you get Chandler Jones. He's probably not going to be playing the, you know, a linebacker technically. Deion Buchanan, Hassan Reddick, it's fantastic. Also headed out, almost all of the offensive staff is leaving, it seems. Harold Goodwin's looking for work. Daryl Drake, receivers coach, is already latched on with the Pittsburgh Steelers special teams coach Amos Jones heading to Cleveland. And then, you know, Harold Goodwin's looking elsewhere. Larry Zierlein, Tom Moore, Tom Pratt, they're all expected to retire. And so we're going to see almost a completely overhauled staff. It looks like Byron Leftwich is out. Confirmed, it seems to be from Ian Rappaport, that on the defensive side, Brenton Buckner, defensive line coach, a guy that lots of guys loved, he's out the door. I read not too long ago that it's going to be Don Johnson that's going to come in coaching the defensive line. I thought maybe Kevin Ross would stick around. He coached defensive backs with Wilkes in San Diego. There is a defensive backs coach coming in. I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but it doesn't look like that Ross may or may not be back, because technically it was Kevin Rapone who was over DBs and Ross was over cornerbacks. We'll see how that goes. But it looks like, based on what Mike Jarecki is reporting, two guys, now they came out on Monday, Josh Weinfuss heard that Wilkes was going to retain some of the Arians staff. According to Mike Jarecki, it's probably only two. One is Larry Foote, which I do not mind that at all. And two, seems like a cry to please Larry Fitzgerald come back. Please, please, please. Jarecki tweeted out on Tuesday evening that the Cardinals blocked assistant receivers coach Kevin Garver from interviewing with the Seattle Seahawks, noting that he was an offensive assistant in 2013, was promoted assistant receivers coach this last year, and more importantly, has a close relationship with Larry Fitzgerald. So please, Larry, come back. Please, Larry, we kept your buddy on the coaching staff.
Right, exactly. This is the don't leave us, Larry. So when you look at the staff, I tweeted this out earlier. I think the biggest move thus far has been the addition of Ray Brown, who's the offensive line coach now. He was the offensive line coach for the Carolina Panthers for the last 2 years. Before that, he was the assistant offensive line coach for the Carolina Panthers for 5 years, worked in San Francisco and Buffalo before that as an assistant offensive line coach. But this is a guy developed lineman that Arizona Cardinals fans every year say, hey, can we sign this guy? Hey, this guy, this guy. And so now it's already started. Before they hired Steve Wilkes, before they brought in Ray Brown, it was, can the Cardinals sign Andrew Norwell? Well, Norwell is a 2014 undrafted free agent that Ray Brown coached up to become an all-pro. He's done similar with Trey Turner, who was a second or third round pick. I can't remember off the top of my head. He worked with, obviously, Ryan Khalil, the great center. He helped Michael Oher turn his career around. You know, there was a lot of questions about Matt Khalil heading to Carolina this year, and he wasn't horrible, which is saying something because he was let go by the Minnesota Vikings. And so I to the beginning with talking about kind of Holcomb and Wilkes, but when you look at the staff, the immediate staff that's being built, you're getting a lot of guys that are going to spend time teaching. You're getting a lot of guys that their expertise is in working with guys and getting them to be better at their position, as opposed to coaching them on how to you know, run or play in the defense. You're going to get guys that are coaching and developing more than they are necessarily coaching at that. So that's going to be a little bit of a departure, I think. At least it looks like it will be, because when you look at the one thing that we've talked about quite a bit is the Cardinals haven't really, and this goes back to, forever ago, right? The Cardinals haven't really developed any offensive line talent, right? Like they've signed talented offensive linemen that were talented in free agency, but they haven't really drafted a guy and developed him and put him out there. And so now, you know, with Ray Brown, a guy that has done that throughout his career, you go back, Jason Peters in Buffalo, it was his second year at left tackle, and then all of a sudden he's an all pro. He helped integrate Mike Iupati and Anthony Davis in San Francisco. And then every year pretty much in Carolina, he was having to kind of coach up different guys. And that's a really important part of what they need at this point. It's something that they haven't had, and I am excited and hopeful that it's the right move.
In terms of offensive coordinator, based on what Steve Wilks said his timetable was for developing his staff, he wants to have his staff in place by the Super Bowl, at least. Words only, just reading into what he means there, that probably eliminates. Now, Seth talked about Mike McCoy, Daryl Bevel. During the coaching process and the search process for the hiring of Wilkes eventually, there was a lot of whispers about perhaps Wilkes would bring John DeFilippo, who happened to be another one of the coaching candidates, to be the offensive coordinator. Since he's coaching in the Super Bowl, it would seem that probably was not a serious candidate, at least for Wilkes. Maybe that was more of a pipe dream for fans or connection that people were making of possible. But it appears DeFilippo is probably not on the list if that's the goal, is to have the staff in place by the Super Bowl, because they won't be able to talk to DeFilippo until afterwards when he's out of contract. And so it'll probably come down to Mike McCoy, Daryl Bevel. Seth's already talked about the pros and cons of both. Of course, the one thing that does give McCoy a slight edge is the fact that he comes with head coaching experience already. And it's kind of interesting, is the same fact, is the two never crossed paths, but they both were brought up with two of the same teams. They both coached in San Diego. McCoy cut his NFL, coaching teeth with the Carolina Panthers. Now, he was long gone by the time Wilkes came around, but they both are former Chargers coaches, former Panthers coaches. And then add to the fact that McCoy has been a head coach before, it gives a little more experience to that coaching room to help Wilkes lean on that. Now, Daryl Bevel has been, interviewed for head coaching positions, but he's not done more than offensive coordinator since for a good while, when he was with Minnesota, when he was with Seattle. And he's good. If you're talking about track record, Seth already talked about it, but Bevel is probably the better option, but McCoy might be the better match for the coaching room.
Yeah, and that's always something that makes sense, is you know when you're talking about a rookie head coach, obviously a rookie defensive coordinator. And we talked about this with DeFilippo, right, last week when we were still questioning on who was the head coach was going to be, and you wondered if his coordinator names were what him. Because I talked about it's Matt Groh, the wide receiver coach, and Philip Daniels, the defensive line coach. So he's talking about three guys under 30. you know, and I said, well, the name, the kind of veteran name was Greg Knapp that was getting thrown around, and that didn't really inspire confidence, but at least it was a veteran, right? And it's the same thing with Wilkes. But I will say it's interesting because, and I didn't know this until I was kind of researching McCoy and Bevel, but Bevel's been offensive coordinator longer than McCoy has. Now, obviously, like you said, McCoy got the chance to be a head coach, and Bevel has not gotten that opportunity. But, you know, Bevel's been a coordinator since 06 and been a coordinator every year since 06 until this offseason. And then McCoy didn't start until 09. And then he kind of three really nondescript years in Denver, again, during the Tim Tebow debacle with Josh McDaniels, and then John Fox came on, they kept him, and then they brought in Manning the next year. So sorry, it was yeah, 3 years or 2 years with McDaniels and then 1 year with Fox, and then they brought Peyton Manning on, and all of a sudden he's getting up boards as the hot new candidate.
Peyton Manning will do that.
Yeah, well, and one of the things that you look at with McCoy, and I think you have to give him a lot of credit for, is, you know, he worked with bad quarterbacks. I mean, let's be honest. Kyle Orton is nothing to write home about. Obviously, Tim Tebow is Tim Tebow. Very loved by his fan base, but not necessarily an NFL quarterback. But when you look at what happened in San Diego, that's where, for me, the concern comes in, was because you had talent in San Diego, and you didn't flourish with it, and they obviously didn't think it was the coordinators, right? Because they kept Ken Whisenhunt on. He's still there, I believe, as the offensive coordinator. And then they brought in Gus Bradley, but they fired. So they were blaming McCoy for everything, and then they kept Ken Whisenhunt. So it's really interesting. When you look at all of it, though, Bevel and McCoy are kind of two sides of the same sword. They're guys that have done enough without quarterback talent to warrant this type of interest. But like you said, kind of at the beginning, if we're going to follow the vision of Steve Wilkes, Bevel makes more sense. If we're going to have a guy in place to guide, might be the wrong word, but kind of be a shoulder to lean on for Steve Wilkes, McCoy is the right guy because he's the guy that has been a head coach and done it.
And
to be fair, he wasn't super unsuccessful. I mean, the last 2 years were bad, but he started 9-7.
Right, right. And in terms of the Cardinals, Mike McCoy might have been here anyway because James Betcher allegedly was going to have him as his OC and Chuck Pagano as his defensive coordinator. So you were going to get the first-time head coach with two former head coaches on the staff. Other than that, obviously, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to find, over the next week and a half or so, we're going to hear names of assistant coaches and position coaches coming in. More, of course, we will likely hear some names that come from the college ranks, probably some names from other teams. Obviously the ones that will be the most intriguing will be the hire of the offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach, maybe the running back's coach, and because of the defensive side of the ball, because that's where the question marks are. The question marks on defense are about how the talent's going to fit the scheme, while it's, you know, the questions on offense are where are they going to get the talent outside of David Johnson and DJ Humphries, assuming he's healthy. And so that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, episode 182. You can find us all over the podcast world. You can find us. We're featured on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on CardsWire.com, through Audio Boom, through Blog Talk Radio. If you could have it delivered right to your device through Apple Podcasts or through Stitcher Radio, also on Google Play. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We've begun a new Cardinals era. Steve Wilkes era, Steve and Steve, general manager, double Steve. And that's enough for this week. We will be back in, whether it'll be next week or a couple weeks from now, when we start getting ready for off-season stuff, free agency, draft, combine, all that sort of good stuff. That's coming up on the next editions of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Again, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks, Cardinals fans, for listening. We'll talk to you guys later. Go Cardinals, and rise up Red Sea. And for the show, rise up and see red.